Welcome, everyone. You are on the Smart Ass Success Teleseminar Series, and this is week three. We are here with Robert Bradford, who is going to be talking to us about how to create an awesome plan that will get you results and one that you will actually follow. So, Robert, welcome to the call. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Avish. I'm honored.
Oh, well, I was honored that you said yes when I asked you to do this. So, Robert, what I'd like to do right at the start is just, in case people need to leave early for whatever reason, I want to be sure that they know how to find you. So why don't you just let people know, if they want to get more information about you and what you do and some of the books and things you have, where can they go?
I would go to www.simplifiedstrategy.com. You can find all kinds of tools and things that people can read at their leisure, and also, of course, contact information for me on that website.
Well, excellent. That's
simplifiedstrategy.com. Yeah.
Simplifiedstrategy.com, which segues nicely into kind of the overview of what we're going to talk about. Robert is an expert on strategic planning, has the number one best-selling book on Amazon on the topic, works with lots of companies, and we're going to get to, I'm going to let Robert tell you a little bit about himself in a moment. But first, just to kind of frame this call, Robert's an expert on helping companies and big and small businesses come up with strategic plans to get them where they want to go and beat the competition. And so we're going to use his knowledge to show us as individuals, whether it's for business or for other things, how we can apply those same principles to make great plans. You know, Robert, I don't know how much literature you read it in advance, but the overall theme of this teleseminar series is to help people figure out what they want, then help them devise a plan to get it, and then stay on track as they go through it. So that's what we're going to be working through. Now, Robert works a lot with businesses, so his answers may come towards a business bent, but we'll make sure that I ask questions to help those of you listening who maybe are more interested in career changes or even personal goals. So, Robert, before we get into your story and you know, you tell us how awesome you are, which we all want to know, I want to start with just a little bit of content first. So, in your experience doing strategic planning, working with companies, and even the things you've seen individuals do, let's start with stupidity. What are the stupid things you see people and organizations do when it comes to making their plans?
I think there are two colossal things that I see so often that they eclipse everything else. And the first colossal thing is that people tackle things that are just too big for them. And by that, I don't mean that they're tackling a big market or a big issue. It's that they're trying to be too big too fast. And so it's not unusual, for example, in the world of speakers to see people who, would form Robert Bradford Global Incorporated, headquarters. Well, you know, at the headquarters is my kitchen table, and it's not just it's not just the pretense. It's not just the show that they're doing, but it's also that they're trying to behave as if they are that type of person or business. And the reality is, you need to match what you're doing to your resources, what you're bringing to the table, what kind of reputation you have. What kind of resources you have, what kind of knowledge and expertise you bring. And the market will try and force you down, but if you try and force yourself up farther than you should go, you're just setting yourself up for hurt, because there are people with far more resources who are out there to compete with you for the big stuff. And it's not that you can't get there, but you need a plan for it. The second thing that people do is they lay out their plans, but they don't spend enough time thinking about scheduling and following through on execution. To me, execution is the weak point, whether you're talking about an individual or a company. It's very easy to say, these are the things I'm going to do in my life. It's hard to say, these are the things I'm going to do next year. And it's even harder to say, these are the things I'm going to do today. And yet all of those things need to be put together and acted upon in order for a plan to come to fruition.
Okay. Got it. Well, those are two great bits of advice. Let me ask you a little bit of follow-up on that. So when you say too big, too fast, and, you know, in our industry, the speaking industry, we come from an area where people are constantly preaching this idea of big thinking, dreaming big, setting huge goals, visualizing your objectives, and that's supposed to motivate you. So where does that, I mean, A, do you completely disagree with that? Or B, how does that balance out with what you're saying about not trying to be too big too fast?
I think it's fine to, I think it's fine to think big. I think the important thing in thinking big is to understand that that there are steps along the way. And you can certainly give me examples of people who have skipped those steps. But I can give you, for every example you give me of the person who skipped those steps, I can give you 10 examples of people who thought they could skip those steps and ended up in disaster as a result. I over the years, I've known far too many people in the speaking business in particular who, you know, gotten into the speaking business thinking big and thought they could skip steps and ended up getting out of the speaking business because they just didn't want to take the steps that were necessary. And there is no skipping. You know, if you want a $10 million business, you got to start by making sure you can make it work as a $1 million business. And if you want a $1 million business, you know, as a speaker, you want to start by making sure you can do a $100,000 business. And that's, you know, that's not thinking big, but if you don't have the basics to make it work at $100,000, it's hard to see why you would be able to make it work at $1 million or $10 million.
Right, and I guess if we got someone who maybe is looking at embarking on a new career, you don't start at CEO, right?
Exactly. You
want to start
as high
as possible, but you have to take those steps to get there.
Yeah, I mean, I might decide I want to go into politics, but I wouldn't announce I was running for President of the United States tomorrow. That would be the stupidest thing ever. You know, there are steps to take going from point A to point B. And thinking big is really about laying that target out ahead of you and saying, at some point in the future, and I like to say, you know, hey, in 5 years or 10 years or whatever it is, I want to reach this point. And then your plan needs to take you to the intermediate steps. And you need to do the hard work that it takes to get to intermediate step A and then B and then C. And most people, you know, they just want to focus on Z. And the reality is you can't get there by skipping over the intermediate steps. And the people who are most successful are the ones who think, you know what, in the next 6 months, if I do X, Y, and Z, these are the things that are going to happen. And also, if I fail at any one of those points, I'm not going to stop. I'm going to have a plan B that I'll learn from that failure, and I'll keep moving forward.
Right. Yeah, and for those listening, last week we talked with Bill O'Hanlon, and he gave some strategies as well on, you know, when those setbacks happen, how do you kind of pick yourself up? So I think that's hugely important. Great, and I think we both know people who, in both the speaking industry and a lot of other areas, who really try to jump way ahead. It's like, actually, not that I'm trying to toot my own horn, but when I first got out of college, I thought about going into acting as a career because I did a lot of acting. I liked performing, wanted to be on Saturday Night Live. But I realized I had no desire to beat the streets, work as a waiter, go to audition after audition. I would love to be an actor. I just didn't want to go through the process of becoming an actor. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about, right? Like, you have to be willing to go through the steps to get that dream you want.
Yeah, absolutely. And that means, you know, as a speaker, you know, the one thing that a lot of people don't want to do is they don't want to do the writing it takes to have good marketing. They don't want to do the speaking practice that it takes to actually get good in front of an audience before you even get paid. They don't want to make the sacrifices it takes to have a real expertise that people want to pay for instead of just, you know, garbage you made up.
Right.
And those, you know, those are, everybody would love to have a career where you make huge amounts of money with absolutely no effort, no preparation, and no sacrifice. And the problem is because everybody wants that, the minute a job opening like that pops up, there's a ton of competition for it, and you just have to be incredibly lucky. And that's why, you know, actors have to beat the streets, because, you know, the sacrifice involved to do it once you're there, if you're any good, is pretty low. It's a fun job, but everybody wants that job, and so you have to make sacrifices to get on the first rung of the ladder.
And Would you say that that's pretty true across the board, whether you're trying to build a multi-million dollar business or whether you just want to lose 20 pounds? That principle is pretty much the same. The people who do succeed take those steps, and the ones who don't, don't.
Sure. I mean, take losing weight. I mean, it's a really good example. Everybody knows how to lose weight. You know, I'll tell you the secret to losing weight. The secret to losing weight is you eat right and you exercise, You have to do it, and you have to do it with discipline. That's the secret. It's not, you know, there is no secret.
There's the secret.
But you have to do it. And that's sort of my second point about execution is it's one thing to have a plan. It's another thing entirely to have an executable plan. You know, I could sit down and say my objective this year is to rule the world. Guess what? I can't create an executable plan for that. That doesn't involve a lot of violence. You know, I'm not into that. But,
Yeah, we're going to dig into that because the subtitle or the addendum to the title of this program was not just creating an awesome plan, but actually one that you'll follow. Because, yeah, like you said, it's easy to make a great plan. I mean, in fact, you can walk into a bookstore, go on the internet, and find someone else's plan. But it only matters if you follow it. So in a bit, we're going to talk more about that. Let me take a pause here now. Just, you know, you've given us already a couple of great ideas. Let's pause a bit, and just so people get a sense of who you are, why don't you tell us a little bit about kind of what you do and how you got there, just a quick kind of high-level version of that.
It's not all that interesting, Abish.
not to you, because you live it.
I've been doing this for about 25 years. I started out on Wall Street, and when I left Wall Street, my father had started a small seminar business, and I bought that company and started building it into a consulting firm off of the strength of the seminars. Because we were getting in front of a lot of people, and they kept asking for, it was all strategy. It's all we ever do. So people were asking for help with their strategic planning. And so I built that up now. I have a number of professionals who are all former CEOs who do this. They present seminars for me, and they also do consulting for our clients. And we work all over the world with companies of all different sizes. I work yesterday with a company that has less than $10 million in sales, or did when I started working with them. And the week before, I was working with a multinational company that had over $12 billion in sales. So there's a huge range, but the problems that I address are always the same. How, you know, everybody wants to answer three basic questions. Where are we? Where do we want to go? And how are we going to get there? And that's what planning is all about.
Okay, well, kind of leads to a question I was going to get to in a bit here, is you're the expert, you know, you're like the leading expert on simplified strategic planning. And so for people who don't know what that is that all strategic planning is where you are, where you want to go, and how you're going to get there?
Yeah, it's really setting your course or direction. In a company, it's what direction is the company going, where are we going to get bigger, where are we going to get smaller, what choices are we going to be? You know, for Apple, the choice to make a telephone, the choice to make an iPad, the choice to make the iPod, these are all strategic choices they made that answer the question, what do we do? You can also answer the question, for whom do we do it? That may be a strategic question for some people. And then the third question everybody has to answer, which is how are we going to beat or, better yet, avoid competition? And to me, if it addresses those three questions or any one of them, it's probably a strategic question.
Okay. Well, got it. And so the goal, as I said about this, is figuring out what you want and how to get it. And for those who don't know you, Robert, which I'm assuming is many of the talks about people from all over, you are one of the most genuinely happy people I know, at least whenever I interact with you. Maybe it's my influence on you. But, you know, you just seem like you really just enjoy what you do and enjoy life, basically, and your work. So, you know, when it comes to planning and these, some of these strategic decisions, A, am I correct in that assessment of you? And B, how much of that you think is related to doing what you love and having a plan that you're able to follow and implement that gets you results?
Well, there's no question that the best strategy any individual can follow is to do work they love. And this is something Steve Jobs said just before he died, I think. He did a commencement address to Stanford a few years ago. He said, it's one piece of advice I can give anyone is do something you love and find a way to make it valuable to people and get better and better at it all the time. You know, I think about strategy all the time. I do strategy all the time. I am never going to get bored with my work. I wake up in the morning sometime and I just have to pinch myself. When I was in, you know, I was in Dubai, I brought the wrong trousers for my suit that I was going to wear for a speech. And I told my client, he sent a guy over with a tape measure, and that afternoon there were two suits sitting in my hotel room. And I just, I had to pinch myself. You know, it's like, you know, you get treated like a rock star. And it's wonderful, but that's the result of loving my work. Because I love my work, I write about it all the time, I read about it all the time, I talk about it with my friends. You know, even when I'm talking to you, Avish, quite often we talk about, you know, strategy, because that's, you know, it's something I love to do. We also talk about comedy, because that's something you love to do. And, you know, when it just infuses every element of your thinking, you get so good at it that an amateur can't hold a candle to you. So that's,
right.
I think that's really important. And for individuals in particular, if you're deeply into something that you can find someone who values, I think you've got the magic formula right there for having a great life and probably being very successful.
I like it. So find something you love to do and find make it valuable for others. So what about, there's a second piece to that, because, you know, there's a lot of people who have a goal, something they really want to do, and they love doing it. Like, if we're using me for an example, like, you know, 10 years ago, I loved improv comedy. I mean, I still love it, but back then that was my business, was building an improv group, and I loved doing that. The challenge is that I didn't particularly love any of the things I needed to do to build that improv business. And so when we called it making a plan, to me a lot of it made the reward, the making of and implementing the plan is the kind of thing that lets you get the reward. So where does doing what you love fit into how you make your plan? If that makes sense.
Well, you know, there are a couple things involved in that that are really, really important. And sometimes we really hate doing the things that are necessary to make the business that is obvious to us at the outset. And I think for you, building the improv troupe, you know, that's a pretty good example. I mean, there are just things you really didn't want to do there. And I think that's part of why you gravitated into speaking, was that speaking is an easier route to make money. Still doing improv. I mean, I love improv too, as you know, and
yes.
I find speaking is a great place to really apply and hone those skills. And it's not the same as, you know, it's not the same as playing the bell game in front of a drunk audience at a nightclub. But when I am speaking to most audiences, I get so interactive with the audience that I have to use improv skills to make the program work and to make it enjoyable for everybody in the audience. So, you know, it's just a way of applying those skills for me. You know, if I could get paid directly for just doing improv all the time instead of doing strategic planning, yeah, I might consider that. It's pretty fun stuff. But I brought something else that I like to do, something else that I'm really good at to the table. And that makes it a lot easier.
Okay, well, I'm going to talk a little bit more about this with you in a moment when we get to this section on strengths. But before we get into what makes a good plan and how do you create one, you know, there's some people who, listening to this or when thinking about their own life or their own business, they really shy away from the concept of planning because they feel it's too rigid, it doesn't give them freedom. You know, what is your kind of approach to that planning? I mean, we both like improv comedy as a performance. So what is your idea about having a good plan versus having the freedom and flexibility to just go with the flow?
Well, I think improv is a really good example of this because when you talk about doing improv comedy, people think, oh, you're just making it up on the spot. And that's it's a skill you either have or you don't. And to some extent, that's true. I mean, you're far more skilled at improv than I am, and some of that comes from practice, but a lot of it also comes from understanding that there's a process, there are rules, there are some very simple rules that are pretty easy to teach people right out of the chute, like how to do yes and how to give the the gift of progressing the story to the other people in your troop. Those are things you can learn. And that's like having a plan. You've got these tools, and it's not that the tools tell you you can't do what you want to do, but the tools are going to tell you some things are going to work and some things aren't going to work. And that's what a plan should be. It should not be a straitjacket. It should be a tool that helps you make the right choices every day.
Okay, that's a good way of looking at it. And when it comes to planning, you know, to some before about 5 and 10 year plans, I know a lot of companies have that. Like, what's a good time horizon for your plan? Because sometimes it seems like a plan you make today and in 2 months will be completely invalidated by changing, you know, conditions in the environment, in the market, in your own life. So what's a, when people are looking at making their plans, what's a good time horizon they should be focused on?
I have four basic time horizons I work with. The first, I don't spend a lot of time on, but I want to make sure my planning is consistent with it. And that's, I call it the science fiction time horizon. It's 15 years from now. And if you want to think about how big a change that is, think about 15 years ago, in 1996, you know, there were still people debating about whether the internet was really going to be a big thing. And, you know, the idea of a cell phone with a camera was still very strange to people in 1996. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there are products that exist today. There's a world that exists today that people were only dreaming of back then. And the same thing is going to be true 15 years from now. So that's one time horizon. And you want everything you do to be consistent with that. The second time horizon is the foreseeable future, which for most people is probably 3 to 5 years, where you can pretty much project the way things are going to work out. And I want most of my directional thinking to be built around that. The third time horizon is the next 12 months. I like most of my execution thinking. What am I going to do? What most people think of as their plans should be done on that basis, because you can manage to it. You can lay out milestones, and then you can hit them, and you can sit down at the end of the year and say, yeah, I did what I planned to do this year. And then the fourth time horizon is the instantaneous, in the moment. And strategic planning should also drive you to something. I just taught a course on strategic thinking. You should be thinking strategically, you know, in the moment when opportunities to think strategically come up. So when someone, you know, for example, this year, you know, someone called me up and said, listen, I've got this deal. Would you like to go do a program in Malaysia? You know, my strategic thinking said, yes, that fits with my strategy right now. And I'd been asked to do these programs over and over again for the past 10 years, and I said no, but this year, you know, I said yes, and I'm very glad I did.
Okay. And so time horizons, these could apply whether you're working with a, you know, a multi-billion dollar corporation, or would you suggest that even an individual look at these kind of different timelines when they're making their plans?
Absolutely. I think for the individual, you don't have to spend as much time on it. You need to match your resources. But you should spend a few minutes thinking about the 15 years. You should spend a lot of your time thinking about the 5 years. You should probably spend a few hours thinking about, okay, what am I going to do this year? And I think you should also ask yourself, as you're doing those thought processes, how do I need to adapt my daily thinking in the moment to make sure that I make choices that match up with the strategies I have, because things are going to change in the moment, and you need those kind of yes and rules in the moment to make good strategic choices, because you're going to have pop up fly balls. You know, do you swing at it or not?
Cool. Well, that's great. So, okay, we've got our time horizon now. We kind of have an objective in mind, which is one of the things we worked on the last two calls. So we know where we more or less want to get to. And we've gone through our time horizons, let's say. So now we're going to start putting our plan together, which, I mean, obviously that's part of it. So what are the elements that make for a really great implementable plan?
Number of things. First of all, an implementable plan is going to be one that has some specific things you're going to do in the short term, for most people in the coming year. So you want to have a set of, I would call them objectives. The second thing that's really important is those objectives need to be stated in a way that, you know, a lot of people refer to it as SMART. And SMART means specific, measurable, achievable. It's a result, and it is time-related. Those last two items, the result, it's a critical one. A lot of people don't do well, and part of it's because they don't remember. You don't plan an action. You plan what you want to achieve this year. So I don't plan write a bunch of articles and submit them to publishers. I plan that I want to have a bunch of articles published in a business magazine this year, for example. And then the time-related means you have to put a deadline on it. You have to say by such and such a point in time. Because without that, it's just an idea. It's just a something you want to do. The third thing that you want to do is you want to have very specific actions identified, really an action plan that will support achieving that result. And in my Simplified Strategic Planning book, I detail how to do that. And that's a process that's useful for individuals, and I've used it for individuals as well as companies. And the last thing, well, actually, there are two things. One is you want to make sure that you pay particular attention to the resources required. Money, but for most people, time. How much time will you have to spend to do these things? And then finally, you want to monitor that you want to set yourself dates for each of the actions you're going to do in your action plan. And you want to monitor and make sure that you're on track with that. So sit down and look at, spend an hour looking at your action plans, you know, every month or even every week or two, and just make sure that you're on track and you're not falling behind. And if you do start to fall behind, you may need to make some adjustments. So if you do all those things, you're going to accomplish a lot more than most people do.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. Let's say, this is going to be a weird sort of question, but, you know, there are going to be people listening who like that, say, okay, those five steps are great, but then they're going to look at their objective and they're going to feel clueless as to what steps they should take to get there.
Right.
So how about starting that process of saying, okay, here's where, you know, what I need to do first and whatnot?
Well, you know, the best strategic objectives, whether it's for an individual or a company, are always going to be things you don't know how to do. And I always tell people you need to accept that sometimes you have to have the patience to have a few steps in the beginning of any action plan where you're figuring out how to do what you need to do, and accept that you may need to rewrite the action plan as a result of what you learn. You know, part of this process is it's a learning process. It's an education. And how we learn about these things is we research them, we try things, some of it's trial and error, some of it's, you know, looking at what the best, you know, the experts, people who've done similar things before have done. There are a lot of different ways to do this. But there are, you know, the key thing is when you write the action plan, make sure that you understand if you don't know how to do it, that's the first set of steps you need to really take into account. And write down the steps you think you need to do, and understand that rewriting the action plan is okay down the road.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to repeat something because you kind of said it quickly, but I think it may have had a lot of impact. You said you tell people the best objectives are things they don't know how to do already?
The best strategic objectives are things you don't know how to do, yeah. Because if you already know how to do it, you know. What's that?
I was about to say, can you explain, you know, what do you mean by that and why that's important?
Well, I'll give you an example of each. I mean, you know how to do improv comedy already. You don't need an action plan for that. An action plan for that would be boring and have no effect on your life. Do you know how to sell that to a market that's going to pay you a lot of money for it? Well, and we've done a lot of talking about this over the years. It, you know, an action plan to figure out how to put your material, you know, have videos of Avish working with a company or something like that, and get that in front of a bunch of HR directors or CEOs, you know, that involves doing things perhaps that you haven't done before. And I know you've been doing some of this, as you have done that, you've learned from it, and you've learned how to do things differently. You know, doing this podcast, when you started doing this, it was something you'd never done before. You didn't know how to do it, so you went out and, you know, figured it out first. And that's probably more useful than just keeping on, you know. You just keep on doing the stuff you know how to do, you'll be comfortable, but you're not going to get anywhere.
Well, yeah, that's a really interesting and powerful point, because I'm sure a lot of people, when they crowded plan. They think the best plan would be to do stuff they're already doing because they know how to do it, and therefore it's kind of easier. And we'll slow smoother, but it makes a lot of sense, which isn't necessarily getting you the result you want.
There is an element of truth to that, though, Abish, that, you know, I notice I did not say that the best strategic plan for you would be to take up ballet dancing.
Right.
Might be a great ballet dancer, but,
sure.
You know, it's to take the thing you already know how to do and apply it in a way that makes you more successful. So I think if you abandon anything you know how to do well, then you're not going to succeed in the new things you're trying. But if you don't try new things, you're just going to stay where you are. So I think, you know, there's an element of truth to what you're, you know, what people say, that you should stay focused on the things you're good at. I believe in that 100%. But I think good strategic objectives are about how to take that and add something to it by learning about how to apply it in a new way for new people.
Got it. So let's go back to say a weight loss example, to kind of take it out of the business realm, just you know, to throw you a curveball here. Could you apply this idea to something like that? Like someone says, okay, my goal is to lose 50 pounds. And obviously, like you said, everyone knows what they need to do, but they just haven't been able to implement it. So how could we apply either this, you know, setting an objective, something you don't know, or even the five steps you said about a great plan or five elements of a great plan to someone maybe who's in that position? How would you do that if you had to?
Well, I think the problem most people run into with weight loss, and this is, I mean, this is getting very specific, but it's probably a useful example. The problem most people get into is we know what to do. It's eat right and exercise. And eating right involves something most people don't like to do, which is not eating stuff they want to eat and maybe eating stuff they don't want to eat. And exercise, you know, a lot of people just don't like it because it's work and it's boring. So in both of those cases, let's take the example of exercise. That's a really easy one to do. If I know that, I know how to exercise, but there's a thing I need to learn how to do, which is how to get over my objections to exercise. Because everybody who doesn't exercise enough has some reason they don't like it. I don't, you know, it takes too much time, it's too boring, or I don't like the way I feel when I exercise. Well, you don't like the way you feel when you exercise, there's a discipline thing, and after you've done it for a couple weeks, usually you get over that. At least I do. I find I feel better when I exercise. But, you know, the thing about it being too boring, there are steps you can take for that. You know, I started running by, you know, listening to podcasts that would, you know, it made it kind of interesting to me because it almost turned it into a game, and that made it cool. And that's how I got over the boredom objection. Now I listen to audiobooks when I'm running.
Well, that's interesting because it seems like, well, it seems like whenever people, and I know I speak from personal experience on this, you research on the best steps to get it, and then it seems like people apply the brute force method, which is, all right, I'm going to force myself to do this, even though it's boring, or like, you know, there was a period where I went through cold calling and was like, all right, well, I hate doing this, so I'm going to do it, and it sounds like what you're saying is there's a certain amount of discipline where maybe, yeah, that is the best approach. But it's also worth making it part of your strategic objective is to attack the activity and say, how can I either more enjoyable, or how can I minimize the parts about it I don't like, or how can I make it easier for me to do?
Yeah, make it something you want to do. I think that's the biggest challenge for a lot of people when you talk about individual plans is find the things you don't want to do and ask, what can I do to make this something that either A, I want to do, or B, I don't have to do because I'm doing something else I want to do that acts as a substitute for it. So, for example, for me, I'm not very good at selling. I'm not very good at making cold calls. And so I substitute a lot of writing and speaking activity, which gets me in front of audiences who will call me up rather than me having to call them. And that works very well as a substitute for cold calling. But that means I have to spend time on it.
Well, yeah, and that transitions nicely to the next section I was going to talk about. I was going to say that, you know, you'd probably admit that as a business owner, there are definitely some areas that you're weak at. I've heard you talk about this in public. But, you know, you've still managed to build a very successful business. And it sounds like this is how you did it, by identifying your strengths, looking at the things you felt you needed to do and finding ways of either making them play to your strengths or finding ways of eliminating them altogether.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think, you know, for the entrepreneurs in your audience, it's a very important thing to understand is that you need to, as quickly as possible, reach a point where you are generating the kind of business, you're generating the kind of resources that you can have, you know, you can have an employee who does and loves to do the things that you're not good at. And I think ultimately every $10 million business is made up of a team of people. And the entrepreneur, you know, or the CEO is just one of those people, but that person is not good at everything. There are some things that person doesn't want to do, shouldn't do. And you need to, you know, figure out a way to get that stuff off your plate as quickly as possible. Otherwise, it becomes the thing that defines your plateau. And a lot of people reach that plateau in their individual careers.
Now, how soon, for a business person, how soon should that delegation outsourcing process happen? Because there's one school of thought, which is that you can't grow until you, you know, get some of that stuff off your plate. Now, you mentioned like a $10 million business, but, you know, is there value in getting that stuff off your plate much earlier?
Well, this is one of those areas where you can be, you know, try to be too big too fast. You know, if you're only bringing in $20,000 of revenue, it doesn't make sense to go out and spend $50,000 to hire someone and give them benefits and all that stuff, right? So the answer really depends a lot upon your resources, and it depends a lot upon how weak you are at the things that you need to get off your plate. You know, I'm pretty darn weak at some of the stuff I need to get off my plate. So I can barely function in a solo environment. So I needed to get in a situation where, where I had an assistant as quickly as I could. That's just me. There are other people who, you know, for good or for ill, they can function very well trying to do everything on their own. And I think that holds some people back, though, because they do try and do everything because, you know, that, you know, the cost of having an assistant, the cost of hiring a marketing person or an IT person is a bite they don't want to take. But, you know, you should always be aware of that there's a point where it's appropriate where what you do is something only you can do, and doing more of it is something that will grow your business, whereas you just trying to, you know, do your own IT work, which is something I used to do, it just wastes your time, and it holds you back from doing the things that you're actually really stellar at.
Well, you know, it sounds like this would apply beyond, I mean, in last week's call with Bill, we also talked about how, you know, on these calls, because, you know, you and I are both entrepreneurial, we have our own businesses, and a lot of the people we talk to do, that's the direction these discussions go. But to people listening who maybe want a different career, or maybe they just want to apply their passion in their office, like they have a decent job, but they really want to apply their passion, they might be so overwhelmed with time outside of their job that they don't have time to do what they love. But even in that situation, they could potentially funnel some of their money towards you know, hiring someone to clean their house or mow their lawn to give them freedom to pursue what they love, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it's always a trade-off, and you just have to ask, you know, if you're going to spend $20 an hour on someone to clean your house, you better be using that time for something that's worth more than $20. And if you don't have something that's worth more than $20 to spend your time on, it's not worth it for you to pay someone to clean your house. And I think
paying someone to clean the house so you can watch TV is maybe not the best thing, but paying someone $20 so you can, whatever it is for you, spend time with your kids or go, you know, just be fully immersed in your hobby you want to spend more time on, like whatever it is. As long as it's worth it to you. It doesn't have to pay you $20 back as long as it's worth $20 to you.
Absolutely. And I think that's it's a meta objective that almost everyone in our society today should have, which is ask yourself, how can I be so valuable to someone that it's worthwhile for me to pay other people to do other things for me? And ideally, not just to pay them, you know, junk wages, but to pay them a really good amount of money to do something for me well. So I want to pay someone $20 an hour to clean my house, not $10 an hour. I want to pay someone you know, a lot of money to fix my car. I want to pay someone a lot of money to, you know, take care of my insurance or whatever it is, or, you know, just to wait on me at a restaurant. I want, you know, I don't want someone who stinks at that. And so, you know, my objective is always to be valuable enough that I can pay other people to do the things I either don't want to do or I'm not very good at.
Right. All right, I want to ask one more question about that. First, I want to pause for a moment here and just people who may have joined the call late or just want a reminder, Robert, we're talking with Robert Bradford, and if you want to learn more about him, he is the expert on simplified strategic planning. If you want to learn more about him, read some of his writings, find his book, go to simplifiedstrategy.com. That's correct, right, Robert?
Yeah.
Okay. Go to simplifiedstrategy.com. He's got a lot of great stuff out there. It's a lot of it's geared towards business, so if you're in business, that'll be very helpful to you. But as you're seeing from this call, you can apply a lot of this in a lot of different areas. And if you're listening to this call on the free version, if you're listening to this live, then but you want to download this and own it so you can listen to it over and over again, as well as get the transcript of it, plus some bonuses, you can still sign up for the paid version at smartasssuccessteleseminar.com. Visit there. You'll get all the recordings of all seven calls, as well as transcripts, plus bonuses. You can listen to it over and over again. Okay, enough advertising there. Let's go back. I want to go back to a moment about what we were just talking about. And this all starts, it seems, with really understanding what your strengths are and understanding what your weaknesses are. And I was wondering, you know, it seems obvious, but some people struggle really with identifying those things. So do you have any advice on how people can really identify what their strengths are and what their weaknesses are?
Sure. You know, you have some idea of this yourself, first of all. The problem I always encounter when people only rely on themselves is that we can fantasize that we're great, you know. You know, I know, for example, Avish, you're pretty good at martial arts, and, you know, so you could fantasize that you're Chuck Norris, but you're not, okay?
Right.
And it's important to be realistic about it. Say, okay, that's a strength I have. Is it something that sets me apart from everybody on the planet? No, it doesn't. It doesn't set me apart from a lot of people in my line of work. It might, and that's, you know, it's worth understanding. So where can you get that sort of reality check? Because I think that's what people need if they're relying too much on their own self-assessment. Your reality check can come from people you work with. It can come from, if you have customers, your customers. It can come from your friends. You can go outside if you work with a coach or have a network of people or a mastermind group or something like that. They can help you figure it out. I know this is something, you know, I know people that, you know, we have acquaintances in common where, you know, we've sat around and we've all told each other, you know, these are the things I see that you're really good at. Robert, these are the things I see that you're good at. And that's invaluable. It's definitely one of the benefits of really good networking that people don't get into because they're so focused on just getting business for their network. But actually getting good feedback is worth a lot. I would also pay attention to where you succeed and where you fail because a lot of people just want to focus on how it's unfair or of course I failed because this or that was stacked against me. But the reality is when you fail, you learn a lot about what you're not good at. And when you succeed, you may learn things about what you're good at that if you don't pay attention to it after the fact, you can kid yourself. And that's probably the most dangerous thing in strategy is kidding yourself about that.
Okay, so pay attention to where you fail and don't kid yourself about it because that's where you're going to be weak at. And, you know, it's funny. It's almost like banging your head against the wall because there are people, myself included, who we just keep failing at the same thing over and over again, but then, like, a week later, we'll be like, all right, this time I'm going to do it well.
Right.
Okay. So then we've got our strengths and weaknesses. The next piece, you know, you mentioned at the top of the call, you mentioned execution and how that's really ultimately what's going to separate people is whether or not they execute. So if we've got a plan, how do we execute? How do we make sure we're executing, or is that more of if we've got the right plan, we will execute it, and then it's more about monitoring whether we are or not?
Well, having the right plan is, I think, one of the first secrets of good execution, but there's a lot more to it. I think for most people, one of the most important things to do is to make sure that a part of your plan is to have actual, specific concrete actions that you're going to take in bite-sized chunks that you can sit down and say, hey, what am I supposed to do this week? And you can have something that you do, and you can do it and get it done. I think that's a really critical item. The other critical item is that you need to be very realistic about the resources required. I don't like to set out, you know, those bite-sized chunks. I don't want to set out a chunk that says, oh, and this month I need to spend 20 days doing X, Y, or Z, because I know personally that when I look at something like that, I'm so overwhelmed by the prospect of spending 20 days on something that I find any excuse I can to put it off. And that's where, you know, execution really breaks down when people start to look at accepting excuses for not getting things done. So the more you break things down and the more specific you make them, the easier it is not to have that excuse. And just a word about specificity. When you are creating your plans, part of what you are doing is communicating with yourself in the future. It is slightly harder work to force yourself to be more specific in your plans today, but what you are doing is you are removing an excuse for postponement and poor execution in the future by saying specifically, in March, I want to do X, Y, or Z. If I say specifically in March, I want to sell business articles to a magazine, I want to send a packet of 12 proposed articles to the editors from 5 different magazines. That's better than just saying, hey, I want to sell articles. Being specific with yourself is really important.
Okay, a couple of questions on some of what you just said. So, you know, we've talked, and this idea of kind of setting realistic, being realistic about your resources. What about people who are anxious, or they feel like, you know, shrinking that objective so it's realistic almost makes them feel like, my God, at this rate, I'll never get there. You know, where's the balance there? Because that's people want to jump in with both feet because they feel like, all right, this will get me what I want in the next month.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you respond to people, someone who would say, well, that's going to take me so long? Like, saying working 20 days on this project this month will really make progress. You know, but if I only say 5 days this month, well, I'm not going to get anywhere at that rate.
Well, in other words, it'll take you years to achieve objective. The first thing I will say to people is sometimes that's true. Sometimes part of being realistic with yourself in your planning is to understand that some things that people want to accomplish are going to take some time. You know, somebody last year said, you know, Robert, it's just amazing what an overnight success you are in the speaking business. And I always have to point out that, you know, 25 years does not feel like overnight to me by any stretch of the imagination. There were a lot of steps along the way. And I'm not saying that you always have to pay your dues. In fact, if you try to pay your dues the way people tell you you should pay your dues, you're probably not going to get there because you're doing the same thing everyone else is. But I also want people to understand that if you do try to set out to do something unrealistic, like spending 20 days on something in a month, some people can do that. For me, I have enough experience attempting to do that to know that that is a showstopper for me. My action plan, my execution will stop dead in the water anytime I hit a step that says spend 20 days on this. And knowing that about myself, I know I have to break up my objectives into smaller steps. Does that mean that it's going to take longer to get certain things done? Yes, it does. But my experience of trying to do it the other way is I didn't get anything done that way either. And in fact, it took me longer because, for example, in writing my first book, I said, I have to write a book, I have to write a book, I have to write a book. And I spent 5 years saying that to myself. And it was when I broke it down into about 100 different steps that it actually, you know, came to fruition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, so let me ask you another question. Let's say you've got this plan laid out. You've got concrete, specific objectives. And you've done your best to make them realistic. And yet you still find yourself not executing. You know, what do you do at that point?
Well, you always have to ask the question, why? Why am I not succeeding? And it's there are two basic reasons. The first is you actually don't want to do some of the steps necessary. And the second is you can't do some of the steps. It usually boils down to one of those two things. Occasionally it turns out that the steps that I'm doing are not really the steps that are needed, that I've written a bad action. But that's, you know, that happens maybe 10% of the time. 90% of the time it's either I don't want to do the steps or I can't do the steps. If you can't do the steps, you need to be able to be realistic with yourself to face that and say, okay, if I can't do the steps and these are the steps necessary, then I have to take a step back and say, can I get someone else to do the steps for me? Can I learn how to do the steps? Or can I achieve the objective by doing a different set of steps? If it's I don't want to, there's a more fundamental philosophical question to be answered here. And I think that goes back to our discussion about, you know, if it's not fun, you either make it fun or you have to find a way to get where you want to go without doing the things that aren't fun for you.
Okay. Well, it's straightforward, but it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
All right, we're coming close to the end here. I want to shift the discussion into, you know, you've got some great business ideas that, you know, I've found really helpful over the years. And I just want to talk about a couple of them pretty briefly, but just to share with them, because I think they're really powerful, and maybe see how we could apply it to people who aren't just trying to build their own business. And the first, I think one of the most useful things I ever learned from you was this whole concept of the island of profitability. And I think there are a lot of applications of that. So could you share with listeners what exactly the island of profitability is?
Sure. The island of profit is just that place where you are doing something that really sets you apart from anybody that competes with you. So it's distinguishing. And it also creates value for people. In a business sense, you know, Apple has an island of profit around product design, for example. In a personal sense, I've made the simplified strategic planning model my island of profit. But, you know, I do it over and over again. I've done over 1,500 plans using this process. Nobody else can claim that, and so it sets me apart from other people. And it's valuable to people. I make it valuable by pointing out, you know, would you rather have someone come in who's just studied strategy or just, you know, ran a company in your industry, or would you rather have someone who's seen it so many different times that we can look at a strategy and I can say, you know, that smells like the right thing to do. I have a strong intuitive sense of what's going to work with a given company, a given team, and a given situation, regardless of how much experience I have in the industry. So that's what the island of profit is. And I think that's really important for individuals to have that sense of there's something I'm so good at, but I'm going to do it over and over and over again and, you know, develop an almost supernatural instinct for how to do it exactly the right way that exceeds what anybody else can bring to the table.
Yeah, and certainly anyone who's, again, this whole course is about figuring out what you want and then getting you a plan to go get it. For a lot of people, maybe not even at first, but that's going to be about how do I monetize my passion? And this is really the key to that, right? Because you have to, because the island of profitability is about not only getting your depth of knowledge and experience, but also making that to such a degree that the competition can't touch you, right?
Yeah, and you know, I mean, one of the key problems a lot of people have is they have a passion that's just way too generic. You know, I think an awful lot of people like to, you know, sit on the couch and play video games and watch TV and, you know, eat Doritos. Those are not passions that are easy to make valuable, because a lot of people do, you know, a lot of people want to do that. A lot of people, you know, there are people who have tremendous practice eating Doritos on the couch. How do you make that valuable to anybody who would ever pay for it? So that's why finding something that is valuable to others that you love to do is one of the real key things, because if you love to do it, it's no problem for you to do it over and over again. I would do what I do for free if I didn't have the ability to charge for it, because I enjoy it so much. And that brings that practice effect into play, which is so important when we talk about the island of profit, because, again, it's a learning thing. The more you learn, the more you do it, the more you learn, and the bigger it gets, and the more it sets you apart.
Well, it's really funny you mentioned the video game thing, because last week Bill talked about if you love video games, that's your passion. He's like, pursue that. But he talked about kind of the next step you're talking about, which is there are people who've taken that passion for video games and turned it into value for others. So that's kind of the critical step, I think, is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
One of the other ideas that I really like that you talk about, and I'm not sure if this is related to the Island of Profitability or not, but you talk about the importance of identifying your strategic competencies.
Yes.
And, you know, that is something that when I heard it, when I kind of re-go and listen to your stuff, it seems really effective for me, especially for someone who's looking to monetize their passion. So could you explain a little bit about what you mean by strategic competency?
Yeah, and then really the Island of Profit is just another way of describing strategic competency. The thing I like people to think about is that competency is know-how. It's the stuff that's inside your head. So that practice effect where you learn about it when you practice it is why competencies are really important. And the idea of the strategic competency is it does have to create that value. But also, and this is something a lot of people miss, is it has to set you apart. It has to make you really different. And most people on an individual level are not different enough. I mean, the people who can really write their own ticket in the world are people who have something that's valuable to other people, where they're the only person in the world who has that competency. And if you can do that, if you can be the only person or the best person in the world at a specific thing and know that you're the best and be able to convince other people that you're the best at that thing, then you can write your own ticket. Even if it's, playing video games, there are people who are that good at playing video games, but that requires, and it always does require, sacrifices that are perhaps beyond what most people are willing to do. So you have to look for a match between the sacrifices that are called for and the sacrifices that you want to make to be the best in the world at whatever you want to make become.
Well, that's great, and that's funny because that comes right back to, I think, the very first thing you said about people, not willing to make, not willing to execute, not willing to make those sacrifices. So it kind of
absolutely running through. So, yeah, and for me, the way I think about it is when I look at my work, there are sacrifices I have to make. Most of them are not big sacrifices. I mean, for me, it's not a big sacrifice to have to sit down and write an article every once in a while. It's not a big sacrifice to have to give a speech. It's not a big sacrifice to have to travel. But for some people, it would be. It's not a big sacrifice for me to have to learn and pay attention to what's going on in the business world. So I chose sacrifices that I like making. And I think for most people, a good way of looking at how to be more successful is to ask, what are the things other people hate to do that I actually don't mind doing on an awful lot?
And I can see that the answer to that applying not just to building your own business, but to a lot of different areas.
Absolutely. So, strategic thinking is often setting things on their head and saying, what do I like to do that other people don't like to do? That's a really good starting point.
Wow, that's great. All right, we're just about at the end of our hour here. I'm going to make a couple announcements, and then, Robert, I'm going to ask you for any kind of final thoughts you might have to send people on their way that will allow them to create a great plan that they'll actually implement and keep them on track to getting what they want. Before we get to that, just remember this is a 7-part teleseminar series. This is week number 3. Next week is week number 4, and we're going to be talking about what we talked about a little bit on this call, which is execution. And we're going to be talking with Neen James, who's going to be giving you techniques on being really productive, maximizing the limited time you have to work towards these goals you're developing on this series. She's an awesome productivity expert. She's got a lot of great tips. And so after that call, you really won't have the excuse of, oh, well, I don't have time to do this, because she's going to show you how to make the most of your time.
Boy, she's awesome. People don't want to miss that. That's going to be great.
Yeah, I was really happy when she agreed to do it, too. She's going to be great. If you want more information about Robert, go to simplifiedstrategy.com, read his articles, find out more about what he does, check out his book. It's all great, great information, simplifiedstrategy.com. And again, if you're listening to the free version of this and you want to get this MP3 along with MP3s of the other 6 calls, plus the transcriptions, plus the bonuses, go to Smart Ass Success Teleseminar, TeleSeminar.com, and get the paid version. Once the seventh week is over, we're going to take down the offer, or the price is going to go up, and you're not going to be able to get it. So definitely sign up before then. And spread the word. If you're enjoying these calls, let your friends know. Okay, so Robert, thank you so much. What do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share with people on how they can create and execute a great plan?
I think the most important thing is to have something you lean into that does set you apart and does create value, and understand how you create value in the world and how you are different from other people, and really be ready, willing, and able to lean into that as hard as you can in your life. And, you know, just learn as much as you can about it and push yourself ahead to the point where you stand out against the rest of the pack. Whether you're talking about a company or an individual, I think the same rule applies. If you can find a way to do that, you're going to be wildly successful beyond what you think is possible in the next 5 or 10 years. And just be willing to do what it takes to do that.
Well, that is awesome. And if I may give one final plug, the first two calls with Scott Ginsburg and Bill O'Hanlon talked a lot about how do you figure out what those things are as well. So it all fits together. Robert, thank you so much. You've given me, as I was going through this, you've given me 2 pages worth of notes, stuff I'm going to apply in my own life, which is awesome. That's why I love doing these, because not only am I sharing your knowledge with others, but I'm learning a lot from it. So thank you so much. Thank you, everyone. And be sure to be on next week when we'll have Neen James talking about making the most of your time and being productive. Thanks, Robert.
All right. Thank you.